Is started? All right, very good. So I wonder if we might do a roll call. Could you pick that up then, Julie, with regard to the members of the OSC, and then we'll do a round here of the table so everyone knows who's sitting here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ron. Perhaps we could start with the people who are on the phone, if they could announce themselves, please. Okay, since we're waiting for the people, actually, let me wait until the people are connected on the phone before we start. Hold on. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for those of you on the phone joining this session of the Operation Steering Committee. I wanted to take this is Julie Hedlund, and I'd like to take a roll call of those on the phone as requested by Ron Andruff, who is chairing the meeting today in Chuck Gomes's absence. Please, those of you who are on the phone, if you could announce yourselves.
Julie, this is Chuck, and I'm here with Ken Bauer. Did you start the recording? Is it being recorded?
Yes, it is being recorded.
Okay, thank you.
It's Philip Shepherd on the phone.
Mason Cole here on the phone.
Steve Metallitz on the phone.
Anybody else that we've missed? Thank you very much, and we do apologize for the late start. We have had some technical difficulties here, and appreciate your patience. We'll take a roll call of those who are around the table here in the session room in Nairobi. I'll begin with myself, Julie Hedlund, ICANN staff.
Andrei Kolesnikov, NAMCOM.
Ms. Chaplow, Business Constituency and CCT.
Aisha Hassan, Business Constituency.
Ulrich Knoben, OEC member.
Jeremy Wagner, ISP Constituency.
Avri Doria, NCSG.
Ron Andruff, Business Constituency.
Liz Gaster, Policy Staff.
David Hall of ICANN Staff.
Deborah Hughes, NCSG.
Marika Konings, ICANN staff.
Thank you.
Very good. All right. So thank you, everyone, and welcome to the OSC meeting. We have a number of items that are on the agenda that we've seen, and I would just like to ask if everyone's had a look at the agenda and if there's any other elements that they feel are missing or we need to add. With that silence, I will assume that our agenda is in order. And under any other business, I would like to add that we will look to see if we can discuss the SOI and DOI at the end of the meeting if we have time. So moving on then, the first order of business, as we know, Chuck Gomes has become our new GNSO chairman. And as such, Chuck has got enough work to do on his table as the chairman, and so he is stepping down also to avoid any conflict of interest that might be perceived. So we've, within the OSC, Philip Shepherd was put forward as an alternate to carry out the work of the OSC through its conclusion, and the committee, as I understand, has all agreed to that, and so I would just like to, if there's anyone that would be against that, we will just carry this by acclamation. All right, with no one responding to that, Philip will be the chairman of the OSC, and he will take over responsibility at the conclusion of this meeting. Thank you, Philip.
Lovely. Thank you very much, everybody.
And thanks from me too, Philip. This is Chuck.
All right. We'll move into item number 4 on the agenda. It is working teams. And Avery Doria, as vice chair of the GCOT, the GNSO Council Operations Work Team, will take over and give us a status report. Avery?
Okay, thank you, Anne. Okay, the GCOT is actually moving quite well along and getting its work done, at least, hopefully. It's basically completed the work on the abstention procedure for recommendation into the Council Rules of Procedure. These have been submitted to this group, to the OSC, with a recommendation that they be forwarded on to the GNSO Council for a full review. At today's meeting in Nairobi, the work team completed discussion on additional changes to the SOI-DOI. They had been sent forward, and then some comments came in after they'd been sent forward, so those comments were processed, and a few very minor changes were made to the document. The work team at the meeting today also discussed language for new Section 2.1 in the GNSO operating procedures addressing the bylaw language. It's Article 10, Section 3.2, which basically defines the meaning of a special circumstance in relation to GNSO Council member term limits. For anyone that doesn't recall, basically there are GNSO Council term limits of 2 terms. However, there's a special circumstance defined, and new language has been proposed for that in terms of moving it from the bylaws to the GNSO Council operating procedures. The language was reviewed at today's meeting, and there needs to be more discussion on the language, so that's being made basically the top priority next work item for the GCOT. In addition, the GCOT sees on its platter now basically 2 more issues that are pending. One of them is basically a generalized procedure for board seat elections. As people know, this time the board seat was done under a special measure because there wasn't anything about it in the GNSO Council procedures. In the future, obviously, there needs to be something. So that's one thing that's pending. There's also a proposed new Section 3.8 on absences to include allowing for a temporary alternate for a long-term illness in terms of council seating that needs to be discussed. We haven't started discussing that at all. That, I believe, brings us to the end of what's on the basically what needs to be done by this group. There may be other things. The other thing that's already started happening is making sure that everything that's mentioned by other groups, for example, the working group team or PDP team that has an effect here is all, you know, basically connected and correlated. And that is about it. I don't know if there are any questions.
Any questions? Philip here. So just to be clear, there are essentially sort of 5 outstanding items, are there, for you? There's the one we're about to discuss, which is abstentions, and we've got declaration of interests, Section 2.1, board elections.
Philip, if I can just interrupt you for a second. Unfortunately, no one in the room can hear you. We're waiting for technical people to turn up the volume. I beg your pardon.
Ah, okay.
Can you give us a test, Philip?
Can you hear me now?
Slightly better, but more. But
Philip, is it possible you're speaking on the on your speakerphone? If it's possible to take your handset, I'm told might be a little better.
No, I'm on my handset.
Okay. Well, try. I can almost hear.
Well, let's give it another try. We will listen intently.
As I understand it, then, Avery, there are 5 outstanding issues after which the GCOT work will be complete?
Yes. I would say that there's four, since one of them has actually already been passed on to the OSC. But yes, there are four items, and unless anything new is presented in that time, yes, it would be complete. Yeah.
Thank you. This is Steve. Well, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, Steve, go ahead.
First, I didn't hear on that list absentee voting, which I thought was one of the things that the GCOT was looking at.
That has basically been subsumed within the material that's been presented on the abstention procedures. Has it not?
No, I think there is more work to be done on absentee voting.
Okay, so that's one that's missing.
Yes, fact it is, because there was a little bit of back and forth just prior to this meeting, and so that is one of the other elements.
Okay, so that's the one I forgot.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Sure.
All right. Wolf Ulrich.
Just coming back to Philip's question with regards to the completeness of our work, just today we were talking about the prioritization of council work, and this may influence also the work of the group, the GCOT, because these rules or this prioritization scheme has to be introduced into the rules of the procedures.
I think on this note, it's important. I think we all realize there's been a tremendous amount of work done and a tremendous amount of staff time that's been absorbed in all of these work teams. And I think that the general feeling from everyone is that we're getting to the other side of the hill. We might be on the downhill side. All of the heavy work has been done. We'll find out at the end of this meeting with all of the various reports coming in. But clearly, I think the goal now is to try to move the program as quickly forward and try to complete these activities and get staff focused on other elements. So I'll come back to all of that later with the near-term workload for OSC at the end of the meeting. Any other questions or comments with regard to the status report or the tentative work schedule for the GCOT? All right. With that, then, we'll move on to what is 4A, item 3. It's the OSC action item for GNSO operating procedures, section 4.5. This section speaks specifically to the idea of abstentions, and there's been a lot of work that's been put forward on it. And one of the key issues I just want to bring forward before we get into these into the changes themselves is that with a reorganized GNSO council, we have a relatively small body, two houses with 7 and 13 voting members respectively. So in order for abstentions not to count as a no vote, the length of this document has gotten quite wordy with a lot of examples and so forth in here. But it came as a result of some input from IPC, which was very valuable, whereby the IPC counselor could be in a situation where they would be violating their code of ethics as a result of having to a no vote or a abstention becoming a no vote. So what I thought we might do is perhaps go into the executive summary and kind of walk through those elements so that everyone understands how we lead into the document. And then we can look at the document itself if, in fact, we feel we need to. So with that, Julie or Marika, do we have the executive summary? Can we bring that up onto the Adobe Connect?
This is Julie Ron. Yes, Marika is going to bring it up momentarily.
And then just another word to our technical staff here. I'm seeing that there appears to be a lot of echo on the phone line. I'm not sure if we can make any changes on that or if people might have to dial back in, but it appears a lot of echo on the phone line. So from their side. So, Steve, we will look into that request to get a clearer line.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Marika. So, what I'd like to do is ask, first of all, has the committee had a chance to see this executive summary? I know it came relatively late, and it was found its way to the wrong mailboxes, I think. But I'm wondering if we need to go through it paragraph by paragraph, or if there's specific things that we can address. So my first question is, has the committee read this, or would they like us to go through this paragraph by paragraph?
This is Steve. I've had a chance to read through it, and I have a couple of questions.
Thank you, Steve. I also have Chuck Gomes in the queue. So go ahead, Steve.
On page one, under fixed denominator, there's the statement that the eligible number of voters in each house is a constant and does not vary for any reason when tabulating voting results. And it raised the question in my mind, what if there is a vacancy in on the council? Would that affect the denominator? It appears from this that it would not. But I don't think that's what was intended.
I would defer to Ken Bauer to respond to that, because Ken was looking into those granular details. Ken?
This is Ken. That's a great question, and you know, I'm reminded that in Seoul we did have a counselor who did not vote, and we did change the denominator on that occasion. I don't know whether that's precedent setting or not. There is this other section on absences, which was referred to earlier by Avery and Ron, that is going to provide a temporary alternate capability for a long-term absence. Now, that section is, I've already drafted some of it, and there will be provisions so that if somebody isn't at a session, the temporary alternate can kick in order that the vote can be done. I don't want to get too far into that right this moment, but the whole concept behind the Scott's work on this abstentions work was to never change the denominator. So I guess we have to keep looking at it to make sure there are no cases where we would ever have to do that and then plug all those holes. And so if there are any gaps, then we need to identify them and then find a way to plug them.
Thank you, Ken. Chuck?
Thanks, Ron. And I think I believe Steve still had another item, but I assume we'll get back to that. I definitely discourage us in this call today from going item, section by section of this. I'm sure there's not time for that. So if there are, I think the best approach is what we're doing now is answering questions, and if there needs to be some follow-up work, that we take this up in take this document up or these procedural changes up in a subsequent meeting. But I'm sure we will not have enough time to go through this item by item.
Very good. I would then suggest we might move on to the next page, and under the section challenge, obligational abstentions, because this really, I think, comes down to the core of the issue. And it looks like we might be getting the other screen up as well here. Very good. So, Marika, we're looking to challenge obligational abstentions. Thank you. So, these two paragraphs kind of detail, as I see it, the key to the issue, in so much as we're trying to sort out how to abstentions would not be counted as a no vote and the rationale behind it. When one understands this challenge and sees the various options that have been presented as a result of it, I think at that point it's a much easier read the document itself, that we presented. So I wonder if anybody has any questions about this challenge and that we can flesh out with Ken Bauer's expertise having drafted it.
Philip here, I think my main question is, are the members of the IPC who raised the challenge satisfied with the solution?
Good question.
Well, this is Steve. I did have a very brief window to consult with Christina Rosette on this, and she raised several questions, which I'd be glad to get to, if this is the appropriate time to raise some of them.
Please go ahead, Steve.
I think the main problem, or the main question, was the practical implementation of this, and what... let me put it this way. If you look at the last paragraph of this paper, it says, the exercise of any remedy for an abstention is the prerogative of the stakeholder group or constituency that elected the councillor. Now, I could tell you our stakeholder group and our constituency doesn't have any procedures in place to do any of the things that are stated in this document, except perhaps we could direct our council representative on a particular vote. But if this were adopted, it couldn't really come into force for a while until those procedures were adopted at the stakeholder group or constituency level. I don't know if this is true of other constituencies, but I doubt that they would have any procedure in place for appointing a proxy or a temporary alternate. So one question is, if this were adopted, what would happen in the interim period before the stakeholder groups or constituencies had their procedures?
Thank you for that, Steve. That's really a valuable comment. And I think that what that points out is that in this wholesale change that we've gone through as an organization, there are still gaps that need to be filled in. So what that tells me as the chair of this meeting is that we need to, the GCOT needs to send this out to the chair people or the presidents, however they are in the various constituencies, and get some feedback from them first. I see Avery's hand and Marilyn Cade's hand in the room. And Chuck, I see your hand is up still. Are you in the queue? Thank you. Okay, Avery?
Yes, thank you. One possibility would be, and not necessarily sending it back to GCOT to come up with a transitional procedure, but just basically to come up with an effective date that would basically be after community review and all those things, if the council passed on this, an effective date that would give, because you're right, and NCSG doesn't have procedures in its process for this either at the moment. So it would take 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever. So if there was an effective date on when this would be the case, might be one way to do it.
Thank you. I'm going to take all the comments and we'll come back and address that. Marilyn?
Thank you, Ron. Marilyn Cade. I'm going to speak in this instance as the chair of the BC about a request that I would just pass on. In sitting through the working group reports this morning and being a member of the PDP working group myself, one thing that's really coming across to me is that a number of impacts, which may represent changes in charters or in documents within constituencies, and, of course, the final charters of SGs are being talked about. This is one, and I'm not making a comment at all about the outcome of this. My comment is a larger comment that has to do with, at some point after community review, final acceptance, approval of these changes, all of the constituencies and the SGs are going to have to scrub their operating procedures or their charters. And I'm hoping that that's being thought about and factored into our thinking, because we can't go back for one change at a time on a charter, at least in the BC. We can't.
Any other comments or questions before we start to address the idea that Avery brought forward and what Marilyn's expanded on? Any other comments?
This is Steve. I had a couple of other comments on the paper, but not directly on this point.
We'll hold that then, those comments in abeyance, and let's come back to what Avery suggested. I'm wondering let's just address this, an effective date. Steve mentioned that it would take some time within the IP constituency, and within your stakeholder group, how much time do you feel that would take in terms of, would you need a face-to-face meeting? Could you be doing this between meetings? In other words, would it be possible to see this done by Brussels, for example?
Asking me, this is Avery on NCSG. I would assume that we could get it done by Brussels. Certainly by the end of Brussels would be a reasonable amount of time to basically work on it on the lists and such, and then time face-to-face to sort of clear up any issues.
Steve, do you feel that would be reasonable, or are we putting that? Am I putting the goalpost too far out?
I'm sorry. With this echo, I didn't hear what you said.
I beg your pardon. I was saying, do you think Brussels, the June meeting, would be a reasonable time frame for the ISPs to make any charter changes? I take into account what Marilyn said, that changes one by one are very painful. So we should really try to look at this, and that's why I'm thinking maybe the June meeting might be the way to do it, where we could, all of the constituencies could look at their charters and so forth in relation to these kinds of things and try to adopt something new by June so that we can kind of close this out.
I don't think June is realistic, but we do have an overall review of our charter that's underway now. And I don't know if it's going to be done by June or not, but this could certainly be folded into it. And certainly by the next meeting, whatever comes after Brussels, I think it could be done.
Chuck, as you have been the chair of this of the Operating Steering Committee, you want to add some thoughts to that?
Sure. One of the things we need to keep in mind, like Marilyn pointed out, is that there are, you don't want to do this piecemeal. And there's still some changes coming in the procedures. So when we start talking about Brussels, we need to remember that we're probably a little ways off from having the additional changes in the operating procedures. And so whether or not you can achieve it by Brussels is probably dependent on how quickly the GCOT can finish its work. And the GCOT is dependent on other activities, as someone else has already pointed out, that are going on. So I think Steve's probably right that it may be difficult to get it all done by Brussels. I think we all want to be, as timely as possible on this, but let's not be too quick to assume we can do it by Brussels until we know when the GCOT is going to be able to finish its work. And because they're dependent on other teams' work, they can't even answer that totally independently.
Very good. So then for just to try to put some perspective on this, then why don't we suggest that I guess the meeting after Brussels is effectively our AGM. So why don't we look to try to have all of this wrapped up? I mean, even the GCOT's work, everything, put a time priority on this thing and try to, particularly with these charter issues, look to have that done by the AGM. And that would then sort of satisfy an effective date kind of idea that Avery's put forward, which I think is a very good idea. I see Marilyn's hand up. And anyone else in the queue? Chuck, I see your hand up, or is that from a moment ago?
I want to stay in the queue, please.
Very good. So Marilyn and then Chuck.
So I have two questions, and I probably ought to know the answer to this, but I don't. At some point, given we have multiple working groups putting forward multiple proposed changes, Do we have a existing plan for how all those changes are going to be put into a single document? So it's a checklist for constituencies and stakeholder groups to work through in implementing the changes. So that's one question. It may not exist now, but it's something we're going to need. Otherwise, we would have each constituency data mining, but a report, and they might miss something. So that's just one thought. But secondly, what is the board review or approval, if any, since these changes are part of restructuring? Is there any board review that is required? And if so, do we have any kind of a public comment process that we are going to have to build in as well, Ron?
Speaking to the first issue, what I would refer to perhaps as the integration list, Ken Bauer has already started work on that, to my knowledge. And Ken, I'm going to defer to you on this, but to my knowledge, we had talked about it within the GCOT because there's rationalization of documents, and where different work teams have been working on things where there's been a slight overlap. One team may have a placeholder for the other team to finish and fill in that placeholder. So that has been discussed at length within the GCOT, but I'm not sure where we stand with the other things. So maybe, Ken, could you kind of shed some light on that?
Yeah, this is Ken. Thanks, Ron. We have started to think about that. We've talked about it on the policy staff for some time now. And there's a lot of cooperation among those of us who are working on various teams that are producing or will produce material that ends up in the GNSO operating procedures. In particular, you know, I think we can make sure that each procedure that comes out is synchronized, others, and cross-referenced. This is a relatively straightforward task. Now, I'm not sure I'm getting exactly at Marilyn's point, because she might be talking more about a checklist of, you know, what do I have to do? And, you know, Chuck whispered to me a second ago, is it doable for staff to go through the charters and highlight where there are elements that might be inconsistent with procedures that are coming out or that we know are in the process of being planned to come out? And I think the answer to that is yes.
Very good. So then I'm noting that this is a work item for staff to do that that particular work you've described. And I see Philip is in the queue. Go ahead, Philip.
Thank you, Ron. I just wanted to speak first in support of your suggestion in terms of timeline, and second, just to point out, of course, that within the non-contract parties house, there is additional complexity because of the underlying constituencies per stakeholder group, and therefore any interrelationship between the constituency charters and the CSG charter. So this is not an easy fix, but speaks again to the point of all agreeing upon that we want to have one set of changes clearly made as a package.
Agreed. So I see Avery, and anyone else in the queue, please.
The one thing I wanted to add about the discussion of the checklist or all these pieces, if you'll notice, each one of these pieces is a numbered section of a single document. So at the end of the day, the GNSO Council procedures are indeed one single document with all of its pieces having been reviewed for, you know, consistency and all of that. So I think that ultimately, yes, a checklist is useful, but that document is the checklist and doesn't need to be data mined. On the question that Marilyn had about review, I actually don't remember, and somebody's going to have to go back, whether this was something that needed to be approved by the board or just reviewed by the board. Bylaw changes have to be approved by them. I think our procedures are something that was sent to them for review, but that needs to be confirmed by someone. I don't have the document in front of me that says which one of those it is, but I believe that our work principles were a reviewed item, not one that needed to be approved.
Thank you, Avery.
Aubrey, that is correct.
Very good.
Chuck.
Excellent, Chuck. I was about to defer to you on that one, so very good. Thank you.
The reason I know that well is because in the procedures that we
temporary procedures that we approved, or the partial procedures that we approved, we did not need board approval. It was just for board information. And by the way, Ron, I had my hand still up because I wanted to share something with regard to the timeline. The Brussels target might be a good target for us to at least suggest for all three of the work teams to try and wrap up their work. That then would allow the time between June and December for the stakeholder groups and constituencies to work on their charters, and hopefully with enough lead time before the annual meeting in December for the council to actually hopefully approve specific recommendations for board approval as needed.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. So let's mark that as the way forward on this one. Steve, you had some other matters you wanted to bring to the table?
Yeah, I had two, one question and one observation. First, it's not clear to me from this document why the team rejected the idea of some type of permanent alternate or standby that could be brought in if and when a counselor had a had an obligational abstention. I could certainly foresee that constituencies might want to choose such a person, and that person could remain apprised of what was going on the council and so on and be ready to step in. But since that was not recommended, I would be interested to know why not. It seems it might be more feasible than having to scurry around when a particular obligational abstention arises and find a temporary alternate and so forth.
Thank you, Steve. So that's referring to the various ways of resolving the abstention in terms of the different ways of getting that vote taken. And I would ask Ken Bauer if he might respond to that.
This is Ken speaking. I am not sure I fully understood, Steve, what you were referring to. As I heard it, it sounded like we're saying that the temporary alternate measure had been rejected by the team, but in fact, it is the third remedy, and it is available. What did I miss?
Yeah, let me restate it. I understand the temporary alternate. The question is, why not have a permanent alternate, someone who would be able to step in for any obligational abstention that arose that disabled a particular counselor from voting? Was that considered at all?
This is Ken. That particular variation on the theme I don't think was discussed or thought about, but I don't... not sure that it's inconsistent with the procedure. You could always name the same temporary alternate. What makes it the temporariness is the period of time that a temporary alternate can serve, and that was actually a legal suggestion to us that there are no cases where there are permanent stand-ins, permanent proxies, or anything of that type. They're incident specific, but I don't think there's nothing that precludes a constituency or stakeholder group from naming the same temporary alternate every time there is a need. So.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. My other question had to do with your analysis in the appendix of the instances of abstention. And I agree with you that in many of these cases, these aren't true abstentions in the sense of the obligational abstention. They are no with explanation. And as I understand it from some of the counselors, The reason this was done, and this was specifically chosen, is that someone who abstains has a right to immediately explain the reason for the abstention and have that in the record. Someone who votes no does not have that right. Is that correct? And if so, in order to reduce the number of unnecessary or perhaps unnecessary abstentions, should we consider having a procedure whereby people who vote no have the ability to explain on the record their reasons?
Ron, can I respond to that?
Please, Chuck, go ahead.
Thank you. Steve, I don't think, with regard to abstentions, we have a practice of the abstainer stating their reason. We don't have that same practice for no votes, but I don't think there's anything to prevent a counselor at any time from, and some have over history, express the reason why they voted no. So, I mean, are you asking for more than that? I mean, whether it's a right, I think any counselor has a right to defend their vote anytime they want to. We don't have that. We don't ask everybody who votes no to explain. I mean, does that cover your concern there, or you think we should have more than that?
Well, I can tell you that the counselors don't perceive that they have that that right on a no vote when a roll call is taken. If that's not correct, then maybe that needs to be clarified on the council.
Now, I think, and you may be right, there needs to be some clarification there, and hopefully this even these procedural changes will add some clarity there. But I think... One of the things that typically happens is that in the discussion that precedes the vote, people have the opportunity during that time to state their position, and I think more often than not that happens in the actual discussion that goes on ahead of time, either on the list or in the meeting itself. But agree with you, we should be clear about that.
Yeah, as I understand it, the abstainer has the right to have the explanation in the minutes. The no voter does not. But maybe that could be provided for under the procedure.
In fact, I don't know, I've never thought of it as a right to have it in the minutes. We always put it in the minutes anytime there's an abstention. And we always ask that for that reason. I think your point's understood.
Thanks.
There's I see Marilyn's hand, and then I'm going to wrap this up because we have other things we need to go get on to, and we've spent a good deal of time on this. So, Marilyn, your comment?
My comment, I'm just going to offer a historical perspective, having been in the council at the time we established this particular set of procedures. Philip was there as well. I believe we mirrored the behavior of the board in our voting at that time, where if a board member abstains, they can give a written statement. But we did not, at least in the time I was on the council, the only time you could provide a statement of explanation that went into the record about your vote was if you abstained. So I'm not suggesting you can't modify it by procedures, but I think there may be some history here that just has carried over, and maybe...
Very good. Thank you, Marilyn. So I think to wrap this up, what I'm hearing is that the GCOT needs to go back and review this issue and bring it back to the OSC with the hope that we've more or less covered all the elements, and the OSC then can make its determination and modifications as necessary, and then send it on to the board, to the GNSO. Does anyone have any other ideas on that, or are we in agreement with that? I have Avery.
I have one question. I don't see these as necessarily modifying the section on abstentions. This sounded to me like a new issue for the GCOT to look at, recording the reasons for votes in addition to just abstentions. At the moment, the way things are written, in an abstention, you are required to state a reason. It's not that you're allowed to. You're required to. And so I hear an issue that sort of says, should we be looking at allowing it for anything, still requiring it for obligationals? I don't know. So that I don't know that that's the same as this particular document. It sounds like there's yet another issue. I don't know.
Philip, you have the last word.
Thanks. I just wanted to say, I think, you know, echoing the same discussion, let's be clear, the reason that we wanted abstentions to state the reason for abstaining was really a part of a disincentive to abstain, so that we knew why they were not voting either yes or no. So we're looking at this slightly backwards. If it's considered to be a positive thing as a right to abstain and therefore a right to get a statement in the record.
Very good. Thank you very much. I think that's this has been a very fruitful conversation. I think we've identified a couple of the cornerstone elements that need to be fleshed out, and we'll look to staff support to get back to us with all of those elements in due course. One moment, please. So it's been brought to my attention, because of the late start, we are way behind schedule. There's the joint GAC-GNSO meeting happening in the Lanana room on the lower ground floor. Begins in about 10 minutes. So anyone who wants to move off to that is welcome to go. What I would like to do, if we could, just quickly move to Olga's report, because I think that's quite short, on the constituency stakeholder group work team. So, Olga, could I ask you please to make your report?
Sure. We have divided our work in two main tasks, and we are now working in the first task, which was already divided into four subtasks. The first one is about developing participation rules for constituencies and stakeholder groups. The second one is making recommendations for operating principles for constituencies. The third one is about creating and maintaining database for constituencies and stakeholder groups. And the fourth is about develop a toolkit of in-kind staff support and services for constituencies and stakeholder groups. We have draft versions of all the four documents. Number four has already been presented to the OSC and to the GNSO, so that is already done. Subtask one is already reviewed by the whole working team, and now we are working in finding the final wording for subtask two, three, and that would be the first part of our work. Then we have the second part, which is about outreach. And we are doing quite good progress in the last month. We had a group with very diverse opinions, so that brought a lot of debate and exchange of ideas. But we are hoping to develop our work as soon as possible.
Thank you, Olga. Any comments or questions with regard to Olga's report? All right. With that, then, I will take that in the record that we've had a report and that we will continue the work with the CSG work team. Mason, are you available to give the communications and coordination work team report?
Sure, Ron. And if it won't take very long. I have a very brief report. So allow me just to say that in early December, after the OSC reviewed the first draft of our report, I got a letter from the OSC in early December, which gave the CCT a number of suggestions to consider. One of your specific recommendations was to split the original report into two components, one dealing specifically with technology improvements, and the other, as
sort of a bucket for all other communications and coordinations recommendations from GMSO. And I'd like to thank the OSC for their recommendations. They were very helpful to the CCT. The OSC was complimentary of the technology sections, which we all appreciated. Thought those could be quickly amended and sent as a separate document. So to do that, the staff, who, by the way, on this call, I must compliment. They were just Ken and everyone else on the staff were just tremendously helpful to us. But to comply with that recommendation, the staff took our original report, separated into two portions that were then titled Report 1, Technology, and Report 2, Communications and Coordination. So then in December and January, we took those 2 months, staff reorganized the material, addressed the various suggestions made by the OCC or the OSC, and added some new content based on the work of a sub-team that included some other folks on the team, Chris Chaplow and Steve Holston. We completed Report 1, which has been reviewed and submitted to the OSC for their review before it's sent to the GNSO Council. Report 2 has been completed as well. I forwarded that to Chuck for his forwarding to the OSC at his discretion. Chuck got back to me and let me know that I did this, by the way, just a few days ago. Chuck got back to me and wisely suggested that now is not a good time to do that given the volume of material that's being reviewed by the OSC and the GNSO. So the OSC can expect that after the Nairobi meetings have concluded, I believe, if Chuck, if I have that right. And that's where things stand right now. The CCT's work is pretty much completed unless the OSC comes back with additional recommendations or thoughts about our work. I don't know if Chuck or if you or Ken want to add anything to that report. I'd be pleased to hear it.
This is Chuck. No, you captured it well, Mason, and the report two will be forwarded to the OSC right after this week of meetings. I didn't want to just confuse things by throwing one more document in front of everybody during this very busy week. So that will be coming. I would hope that we can take action on report one before we close this meeting.
Very good, Chuck. Ron, I think that's pretty much it for me.
Thank you, Mason. Congratulations to you and the CCT. Excellent work on that report. One, I also commend that work, and thank you for it. I have Olga in the queue, and in terms of discussion, any other people would like to get in the queue? All right, then, Olga, please get started.
Thank you, Ron. In the sake of not losing time, I just forgot to thank Julie Hedlund, that has been so important to the work of our working team. Just wanted to point that.
Thank you, Olga. I think on behalf of all of us in the work teams, I think we can reflect back our great appreciation to staff. For myself, I've been around ICANN for the better part of 10 years now, and I recall it was a long, about in the first years 1, 2, and 3, there was a going battle between staff and the community because they were so overloaded, and I think there was a tremendous feeling that we didn't appreciate the work. And now that pendulum has swung the other way because everyone's gushing about the staff work, and I just would like to comment that we're very grateful to staff for all of the wonderful things they do in helping us shape ICANN. Well, with that then, if there's no more discussion on this, I would propose that we recommend that Report 1 be sent to Council. Anyone against that motion? Very good. So then Report 1 will go to Council, and then as I understood you, Chuck, again, we didn't. It's very difficult to hear here, but I understand that the Report 2 will be sent to the OSC post-Nairobi. Is that correct?
Correct.
Excellent. Very good. So with that, then, we'll check off the CCT work team report and move to item 5 on the agenda. The near-term OSC workload, in short, is going to be much heavier than it has been in the past months. And I think that what we've heard today is we've got some very good timelines, as recommended by Chuck, to move the work to as much completion as we can, recognizing that there will be some open issues perhaps for the GCOT to finalize, and with the idea that we can bring these work teams to a completion of their work by Brussels and then allow for charter work and that sort of thing to be done before the annual general meeting. If there's any other thoughts on that, Chuck or Philip, as the outgoing and incoming chairs, I welcome it.
Thanks. Chuck, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. And thank you for standing in and sharing the meeting today. I appreciate that very much. I also want to thank all the members of the work teams. I agree with all the compliments on the work of staff, but also I want to compliment every one of the work team members and the chairs and co-chairs, et cetera, because as we're starting to see the results of our work, it's very impressive. There's some just outstanding work, and it's been a collaborative effort, taking lots of time by lots of people. So my compliments and my thanks.
Philip?
Chuck, Ron, thank you. Ron, again, also my thanks for chairing this session. I think what I will try and do as chairman post Nairobi is look closely at the workload and see what that necessitates in terms of any additional meetings by telephone, conference of the OSCE if necessary before Brussels. I know up to now we've basically met at each physical meeting. That may well be all we need to do, but I'll review that with staff, looking at what is outstanding.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you also, Chuck. So then, in conclusion, we had the any other business element, and we had statements of interest and declarations of interest listed there, but as the time is upon us to close the meeting, I will defer that to the next OSC meeting, but I would encourage all OSC members to please give that a look. I think that having worked on the work team, the GCOT work team, with regard to the statement of interest and declaration of interest, we feel that the work has been done on our side, so we welcome the OSC input as quickly as possible so we can hopefully check that box. So with that, Julie has a comment.
Yes, Ron, I should note that there were some minor changes made to the SOI-DOI document in the GNSO Council Operations Work Team meeting today. Those are reflected as red lines in the version that is now posted on the OSC Wiki. And when I complete the brief notes from this meeting, I will also send that document around to the group.
Thank you, Julia. I would note that those were not such material changes, more cosmetic and cleaning up the documents. So, as I say, if we can move that forward, that would be great. Steve, I see you've posted, has it been circulated yet? And Julie just responded. So with that, unless there's any other business to be discussed, I will declare this meeting over, and we can stop the recording. Thank you all.